Good evening, Portis. This is the host with me, Papla, and my co-host, Justin, bringing you tonight's edition of The Host. How are you, Justin?
I'm doing very well, and you?
I'm good. Can't complain. I had a quiet weekend.
Mm. Same here.
Yeah. The death of two prominent actors in South Africa was making headlines over the weekend. Was very sad indeed.
Yeah.
And then also the death of the AmaZulu king, Goodwill Zwelithini. And that is also a big matter. It's very interesting to see what's going to happen to the Ngonyama Trust now. And will Mokgweng, our Chief Justice, apologize for his remarks regarding Israel?
Israel.
He said if 50 men can walk for 10 years in order to force him to apologize, he will not apologize. What does that say about him? What does that leave his legacy? All those things were very prominent in this news today. But tonight, it's a very interesting night. You know, we love to have a guest on our show.
Yes.
It's not interesting because it's my payday on a Monday. Feels so good to get paid on a Monday. Then it feels your salary will last 6 weeks or 7 weeks.
Yeah.
Other than getting paid on a Friday. So, yeah, today is my payday. I feel good. But I feel better when I know we have a guest in the house. And tonight we are blessed to have the Honorable Executive Mayor of Tshwane in conversation with us. And right here on Port FM. We're going to play a song just to set the mood. And then when we're back, we will be talking about the evening. Here is the OJs with We In This Together. On the line, we have our executive mayor, the Honorable Randall Williams. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you, and good evening to your listeners.
Oh, okay, that's good. I'm glad I can hear you clearly.
But it seems like the listeners cannot hear him.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, absolutely, clearly.
Okay, that's great. We started this song with the OJs, and it says, we're going to work it out. We are in this thing together. The relevance of that song that I choose was that to develop a community, everyone has to bring his part. We cannot depend on one person, one organization, one politician. We are all in this together. So that's why I played that song. And I want to say a big thanks to the team in your office, Mr. Mayor, and our station manager here at Port FM for making this interview possible. I know your schedule is very busy. We've been trying for some time, but unfortunately, tonight was the right time. So big ups to your team there, Jordan and them. We appreciate it. I just want to say to the listeners that this is a cordial conversation with the mayor that we need, and I hope Mr. Mayor that this will not be the last time that we have this conversation. I think it's important that people sometimes hear from your mouth what is the plans, what is going on. Sometimes we don't believe other sources, and we appreciate that the mayor is coming on directly to address us. This is also not the flung dunk and who wants to be a millionaire or grilling show. It is a discussion regarding the issues in and around our ward so that we can have better communication and better understanding of how things work. To start off the show, we're going to ask my co-host just to read a small bio about yourself, Mr. Williams.
All right. So Councillor Randall Williams, a long-standing councillor and seasoned politician, was elected as the executive mayor of Tshwane on the 30th of October 2020. Now, Mr. Williams was born on the Cape Flats in Cape Town. He holds a Master's of Laws degree in International Investment and Trade Law from Stellenbosch University and a Bachelor of Laws from the University of Pretoria. Previously, Mr. Mayor served as the MMC for Economic Development and Spatial Planning and as the chairperson of the Municipal Appeals Tribunal from 2016 to 2019 And before being elected to the City of Tshwane Council, he worked for the Department of Trade and Industry in the International Trade and Economic Development Unit as Chief Director of Trade Policy and Negotiations, and was a member of the company's tribunal.
Thank you very much. That was a shortened bio of a very long bio of our mayor. I just want to mention in the studio, we also want to welcome our councillor, our Ward 43 councillor, Benjamin Lawrence II. How are you, sir?
Thank you. I'm fine, thanks. Thank you,
okay.
Mr. Apple.
The councillor was invited by the mayor because protocol was followed. We invited the mayor and he said it will just be the right thing to do to... And we had discussions outside. There are some things that are very basic that the councillor can help us also to clear the then the mayor don't have to answer for those things. Okay, Mr. Mayor, I think we are settled in now. Mr. Mayor?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Okay.
Before you ask your first question, I just want to make a small correction.
Okay.
I don't have an LLB from University of Pretoria. I actually have an LLB and BProc degrees from University of South Africa. I was at University of Pretoria where I was busy with my doctorate, but I have not completed it.
Okay. Thank you for the correction. We appreciate it, but I think that is the info that we got from Wikipedia or your party's website. But it's fine. I'm glad you cleared that up for us. Thank you very much. I think the first segment that we want to deal with, Mr. Mayor, is the issue, I think, very close to your heart, because it is something that I also read that you were very, very much involved with, and that is the Tshwane Automotive SEZ. Now, this TA SEZ is Africa's first automotive city and recently a multi-billion investment by the Ford Motor Corporation, making it the biggest in terms of automotive manufacturing in Africa. That must make you the proudest mayor in South Africa, sir.
Yes, actually, there as well, I just want to provide additional information. When I came into the city as member of the Mayoral Committee for Economic Development and Town Planning in 2016,
mm-hmm.
There was already a project called Tshwane Automotive City, which is based in Rosslyn. As you know, half of the motor vehicle manufacturers are based in Rosslyn.
That's right.
However, in about 2017, I was approached by Ford to help them. They wanted to expand their capacity, their manufacturing capacity, and they wanted additional land. And what they also wanted to do is to ask some of their component manufacturers to relocate to South Africa. And at the same time, I was approached by the provincial government, where they asked me, because I worked for the Department of Trade and Industry, and I knew the minister at the time, Rob Davies, to petition him to declare Silverton a special economic zone, which would help Ford to attract the motor vehicle component manufacturers. So that I certainly did. I assisted the Gauteng provincial government, and we managed to get an SEZ license from Minister Rob Davies. And that's how it came about. So now we have the Tshwane Automotive City located in Rosslyn, and we have the Tshwane Automotive Special Economic Zone located in Silverton, where you have predominantly a Ford and the other motor vehicle component manufacturers.
Wow, that's great. I think between Rosslyn and Pretoria, they manufacture about 40% of all cars in Africa. Am I right?
No, not correct, actually, but close enough. Tshwane currently manufactures about 50% of all motor vehicles in South Africa. So the biggest manufacturing center is not PE, Obviously, I thought Elizabeth's name as Shane. I'm not good at the pronunciation of it, so I won't attempt. So it's actually Tshwane where we produce most of the motor vehicles, and the percentage is going to increase because by 2022, Ford will be in full production with their extended capacity. So what they're looking at from 2022 is to produce 200,000 motor vehicles per year. So we should stand about over 55% of South Africa's motor vehicles are manufactured in Tshwane.
Wow, wow. I think it's nice to stay in Tshwane. Before we go to the next question, I just want to inform the listeners that we have received a big bag of questions.
Yes.
We will not get enough time to get through all the questions. But what we will do, if you don't mind, Mr. Meyer, is we will forward the other questions to you, and then your office can send it to us, and then we can, especially where we know the names of the listeners who's not anonymous, then we can give them feedback if the counselor cannot give them. I think our counselor can also give answer to some of the questions here. Is that in order with you, Mr. Meyer?
Well, certainly that's in order. Where Benjamin can assist, please, he may do so.
All right.
Okay, sir. Still on the issue of the TASEZ, bringing it back to a community such as Estrus is directly affected. How does one express the benefit to the community in terms of SMMEs and obviously employment opportunities for our community?
Look, what has happened, as we said, Ford started the project, and this project has now developed beyond what Ford initially imagined. So with us establishing a special economic zone, what national government normally does, they would register a company, which is now known as TASE, Tshwane Automotive SEZ.
Okay.
And this company now looks at the infrastructure around the SEZ, putting all the infrastructure in place. And the way I understand it, there will be about 16 motor vehicle component manufacturers, apart from Ford, that will be part of the SEZ. So it's quite a huge development. So what TASE has done, they put down certain requirements, especially during the construction period, where they stated, where possible, local labor must be made use of during the construction phase, especially.
Mm.
And for that, they put forward an address, an internet address, whereby people can register for jobs in the SEZ, especially during the construction phase. I believe in now Napiers, they also have an office where you can physically go in to register for job opportunities. And as far as SMMEs are concerned, obviously, they brought in, as far as the construction concern, bigger companies, multinational companies, but there's also requirement that work should be subcontracted to SMMEs from the surrounding areas like Esters, Mamelodi, Silverton, Waterloo, etc.
Okay. In order to invest so much, so many billions in that area, what are the reasons that make the TASEZ so viable or successful?
Well, I mean, already we have a number of SEZs that are successful. The ones in the Eastern Cape, namely Kuga, works extremely well. Because what makes SEZ, and you must remember, these are not new businesses. When new businesses start up, the failure rate is extremely high. But these are established businesses that are merely relocating.
Uh-huh.
So these are businesses that have already all their operations in place, they've got all their clientele in place, and they're merely relocating to the SEZ. By doing so, they become even more profitable because SEZs provide you with incentives. Now, SEZs all over the world, and they use it, for example, extensively in China, the countries use different types of incentives. for companies that invest in SEZ. For example, in some countries where you have a minimum wage in place, by moving the company to an SEZ, you are no longer bound by that minimum wage. You can actually pay less. You can pay your labor less. But that is not the case in South Africa because we don't have a minimum wage as such in South Africa. But other incentives are, for example, where you import goods, you don't pay tariffs. Where you export goods, you don't pay excise duties. For example, you also, where currently you find that the company's rate in the new budget was lowered from 28 to 27%. But in SEZ, the company rate might be 10%. I don't know. It depends on the national government what kind of incentives they will accord the Tshwane Automotive SEZ. And it's not incidental that you find that it is the Director General of the Department of Trade and Industry who's the chairman of the board of Tshwane Automotive SEZ.
Oh. Okay, I think the last question on this TASEZ, Mr. Mayor, is what SEZ government incentives is available for investors?
Yeah, that's what I just mentioned. It obviously depends on the country and, of course, where the SEZ is located. But I can imagine in Tshwane, where Ford, for example, is heavily export-orientated. So by them importing components, for example, or their their suppliers, which are now coming to their component, motor vehicle component suppliers, who are now moving to the SEZ. For example, there's a company coming in from Portugal. There's another one coming in from Thailand. They're all moving to the SEZ. So when they import raw material to manufacture their components, the imports will be duty-free. So it means they'll be importing the products at a lower cost, which means they make more profits, they can invest more money into their factories here in South Africa, employ more people, and so forth. Same applies to Ford. The way they export, I mean, less duties placed on them, getting components in will be cheaper because their component manufacturers can offer the products to them at a cheaper price, which means the Ford operation becomes more profitable. As I said, they pay less tax as well. A lot more tax incentives are given to these companies in SEZ. So it all depends because ultimately this is controlled by national government. They will make the determination what kind of incentives will be given to the Tshwane Automotive SEZ.
Mr. Mayor, we're going to pay the bills. A short, very short break and we'll be back quickly. It is 6:30 on Port FM and we have the absolute pleasure of having our Executive Mayor, Mr. Randall Williams, with us on the line. And we're going to change focus now to the big elephant that everybody asks, that most of our questions are based from, and that is service delivery. Mr. Williams, with me in studio is my co-host, Justin Kepler, and she's going to ask the next few questions.
All right, Honorable Mayor, just moving our focus to service delivery now, I would just like to ask, do you think that service delivery in the Tshwane area is up to scratch or is sufficient, or can more be done about it?
Okay, well, Tshwane is actually in a peculiar situation. But let me just start off by saying I don't think at any stage have we achieved a satisfactory level of service delivery. If you look at the infrastructure in Tshwane, especially Easterus, yeah, and other parts of Pretoria is the CBD, where the infrastructure is up to 60 years old. And over the many decades, even before 94, the infrastructure has not been maintained properly. And now we're paying the price for that. The fact that it means when you do not maintain your infrastructure, You have to do more frequent maintenance because you have more frequent breakages in the infrastructure. And what has made matters even more challenging for us since last year we were placed under administration, I think round about March last year. And then while we were under administration for more than 8 months, we heard, unfortunately, that the administrators turned a 284 million surplus into a 4 billion rand deficit by 30th of January last year. So already we knew we were in for trouble once we came back into office. And of course, going forward for this financial year, which started from 1st of July last year until 30th of June this year, we found that the administrators unfortunately did not plan properly for this financial year. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and yet the assumptions of the administrators as far as revenue collection was concerned, I can only qualify as overly optimistic. They unfortunately planned that we were going to recover 90% of our revenue during a lockdown period. Obviously, that never materialized. When they started out in July last year, they only managed to recover 78% of our revenue for the first month. The other months were not much better. So by the time we got to the middle of the year and we got back into office from the 1st of November, we discovered that we've got a 2 billion rand shortfall on our budget. So come end of January, we then had to do an adjustments budget to correct the budget because your expenditure needs to be in line with your revenue collection. If your expenditure is more than your revenue collection, it means then that you have a, what they call an unfunded budget. And in terms of the law, unfunded budgets are unlawful. You're not allowed to have unfunded budgets. So we were obligated to cut down on our expenditure to bring it in line with our reduced revenue collection. So what does that mean? We have to cut down on a lot of projects. But what I've said is we're not going to cut down on basic service delivery. And unfortunately, an additional challenge that we found, very little basic service delivery took place during the administration period, simply because tenders were allowed to lapse. So there were no service providers to deliver the services. For example, grass didn't get cut.
Yeah.
Lights were not properly fixed. Potholes were not repaired because no hot asphalt was being produced, manufactured by the city. And so first thing we had to do was to put all those contracts in place. Get supplies of bitumen so that we can take it to our quarry so that we can produce hot asphalt. We had to get service providers on board to fix street lights. So within the last four months, for example, we fixed 68,000 street lights within the last 4 months. But we still haven't caught up with the backlog because in a lot of areas, only 20% of the streetlights were actually working. So we fast catching up with reducing the backlog. Potholes in the last, I would say, 2 months, because we were only able to start producing hot asphalt from January. So in the last 2 months, we fixed over 3,500 potholes. But we still have a huge backlog as far as potholes are concerned. I think there are something like over 17,000 potholes here that we still have to fix. Massive backlog. Grass cutting. I've had to force my through that people fast-track processes.
Yeah.
And I had to oversee processes on a daily basis. And initially, only 5 service providers were appointed to cut grass in the city. So I told them, but how are 5 service providers going to manage to cut 6,300 square kilometers of grass? It's not going to happen. So finally, we managed to get 16 additional service providers appointed. So now we've got 21 service providers, three for every region in the city, because we've got seven regions. So that's what we're concentrating massively on. We need to get on top of basic service delivery. As far as traffic lights are concerned, those tenders also, we had to start anew. So now finally those tenders are almost all the contracts are in place, and we will be able to secure a replacement part for the traffic lights that are not working.
All right. So, Honorable Mayor, you mentioned there's a backlog in streetlights and potholes, as well as grass cutting and traffic lights. We just wanted to find out from you, which areas of service delivery do you think needs urgent attention besides the ones that you have mentioned?
Look, one thing I've done to hold officials accountable, because when people are not accountable, they are not productive. In fact, in a lot of instances, they don't work at all. So no service delivery takes place.
Yeah.
So immediately when I got into office, I started what is known a service delivery war room every Friday morning. Because what I work on data. So what does that mean? A service delivery war room means you must report what you have done for the past week, and there must also be monthly schedules in place for the following weeks where you are going to work, so that all councillors and if residents want the information, they should have access to the information as well, so that it is indicated via schedules where work will take place.
Okay.
And then on a weekly basis, the regional executive directors must report back of what they have done for that week. Because I work on the basis of output. I work on the basis of data. And one thing we have also done, we need to look at the veracity of the data. Is that data true, or is it not falsified? So we've worked on that as well. So that's why I can tell you there's data for every region and every ward, because it's all over the city that there has been virtually a collapse in basic service delivery.
I think we are having an interview about Tswane. Actually, it should have been about our ward here, Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind, if we center on in our ward, because a lot of questions has been like, what is the difference since 2016 and now, and what is the DA doing for the past 4 years in our ward?
Well, as mayor, I introduce a schedule where we have schedules of what we're doing every day.
Okay.
So I can gladly send you a schedule since I've introduced it. I've got the ones since we've done work in February, and it's been catalogued every project that we've completed, grass cutting, litter picking, pothole filling, street light fixing. So all those are on schedules which can be verified by the residents what work has actually been done.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand. And I must say, we see that the grass has been cut, not just today, although today people actually send me pictures to say, look how beautiful the graveyard is. We hope it's a constant thing and not just because the mayor will be in studio today. But the Mr. Mayor, there's also some other things, you know, general collapsing of the properties owned by the city in our ward here. I mean, our civic center, if you walk in the main wall and you look up to that wall, we one day had a meeting, and the councillor can attest to that, where one of those panels fall off and it could have been fatal. You know, the general condition of our infrastructure, our civic center, the sports facilities. We mentioned the graveyard, the old community wall, the one that's so depleted there at the entrance. It's an ugly sight there. Is that plans also included in this war room to make changes towards those properties, Mr. Mayor?
Look, as far as the city are concerned, we own many thousands of properties. So obviously at the war room level, we can't deal with that. And if you look at the maintenance of properties and also the capital projects, it has been underfunded. That is a fact. So we have not properly looked after our properties. I believe as far as the community hall is concerned, what I've been informed, there's going to be a decision shortly whether it should be demolished or not. And then as far as the civic center is concerned, apparently some issues have been addressed, but important issues like the ablution facilities and also the roof will now be addressed in the new financial year.
Well, that is great news, Mr. Mayor, because we have a beautiful civic center, and if you don't maintain something that's beautiful, obviously it will dilapidate.
Yes, yes, definitely.
All right. So I just wanted to ask, Honorable Mayor, as a local SMME, how do we benefit from the city's procurement processes, like tenders and so forth?
Look, as far as tenders are concerned, we don't have a specific program to benefit local companies. Each project that is drafted according to certain specifications. And obviously then we follow the National Treasury guidelines when doing the supply chain management processes, where first of all, it will then go to a bid evaluation committee and then a bid adjudication committee. Now, as politicians, we are not involved in supply chain processes on how successful bidders are selected or not. We follow National Treasury guidelines. And if National Treasury guidelines say we can introduce to benefit local companies over companies that come, for instance, from Joburg, yes, then we should do that. But that is something we will need to look at. I'm not aware of National Treasury regulation that says the bidder is from Esterus and the project is in Esterus, the project should go to the bidder from Esterus and not to the bidder from Silverton. I'm not aware of that. Yeah. What I'm also, however, aware of is the preferential tender policy, which is also law, where, for example, there's a government tender, then 30% of that tender should benefit the local community. So that is part of our tender processes.
I hear what you're saying, and it makes sense, Mr. Mayor. I don't want Esterus businessmen to feel and confide to only to work in Esterus. That I agree with you 100%. But, you know, and I don't know, is there something, how is this going to be resolved? But we know that in our neighboring Mamelodi, for instance, there are talks and rumors that if you're not contractor from there, even if you're from Attridgeville, you won't get it. So, you know, we in Esterus, the business guys here, feel that we will never get a contract in Mamelodi, even if our price and everything is right, because those guys protect each other there and they protect their jobs there. Hence, this question always come up. I agree with you with what you're saying. We should be free to do business wherever we want to. But if you go to other people, other areas, then that restriction between inverted commas is all of a sudden there and you can't do business there.
Yes, look, I will admit that our tender processes are flawed. And look, this is a major problem in government, at all spheres of government. You have this problem. Corruption in the tender processes are rife. And the only way we're going to overcome that is we heavily automate our systems. Take humans out of the system as far as possible. The more you take humans out of the system, the less corrupt the system will be. And that's my view.
All right. So, Honorable Mayor, I just really want to talk to you about the situation and the COVID-19 and what it meant for this community. So, yes, we saw a lot of people losing their jobs, some not being able to keep up with payments and so forth. So I just want to speak about special arrangements regarding the payment of municipal fees, especially for those who lost their employment during COVID-19.
Okay. Look, what we have, we've always, where you have issues with payment, you can then come to the city of Tshwane, one of our customer care centers. Obviously, you have to do it face-to-face. And then enter into a payment arrangement. But right. what we also have is a program called the POP, where people really don't have any money or very little money. The POP stands for Poorest of the Poor programs, where you can register yourself on the POP register, and then you're entitled to lower payments, you're entitled to extra free electricity, free water, and so forth. So that is a program that we have, and the local ward councillor should be able to assist people and indicate what are the criteria for qualifying for a POP register. So they should be able to approach the ward councillor and ask for assistance.
The big issue, Mr. Mayor, here is that people complain about the up to 35% of the account that they had to pay before they can make an arrangement, which some of our listeners' questions feel that is way too high.
Yes, I'm not aware of the percentage, but I can find out and we can come back to you about whether we have leeway as far as the percentages are concerned. And I can communicate to you either through my office or via Benjamin.
All right. So more on COVID-19. We are pro-vaccines, and we just like to ask what is the plan, especially for the city of Tshwane, regarding the rollout of the vaccine?
Look, what we've done planning with the provincial government. Okay. And we've got a very, very good rollout plan.
All right.
On for as far as vaccinations are concerned, we know where all the different clinics are. So it's widely the vaccination points are widely distributed over the Tshwane region, over all seven regions. However, it's all dependent on us procuring doses of vaccinations. Now, as you've known, the national government so far have not succeeded in getting a significant amount of vaccines for the public. In fact, as we stand here now, there is no approved vaccine in South Africa. Yeah. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine that national government got, they got smaller amount of doses. I think at once they 80,000, I think possibly another 120,000, but nowhere close to inject people according or vaccinate people according to a plan that was mentioned by the Minister of Health during, I think, in January, where he indicated that for us to vaccinate 40 million people by the end of the year, we will need to vaccinate 300,000 people per day. That is not happening because we don't have the doses. For us to vaccinate 300,000 people per day, we will need 9 million doses per month. That is not happening. We don't even have an approved vaccine in South Africa.
Yeah.
The Johnson & Johnson vaccine has only been approved for an implementation study, only for a limited study, not for general application. So we're expecting that we will have approval for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to use on the general population by the end of April, second half of April. And then in all probability, we might get doses to the general public from the 1st of May. So as things stand now, we don't have the doses to vaccinate the general public. And the implementation study is limited to healthcare workers. And it's not a very good situation. So I hope the court case that's been ongoing now, where national government admitted that it's not only a national government in terms of law that may procure vaccines, but in fact, private companies can also procure vaccines. That was a very good admission. So I hope that not only a national government going forward will procure vaccines, but that other levels of government, other spheres of government, such as provincial governments and including private companies, will start procuring vaccines so that vaccines can at last arrive in South Africa in the millions of numbers. And that's what we need every month. We need about 9 million doses every month, which unfortunately is not happening now.
All right. So during the COVID-19, we saw a lot of protest right before that as well. I just want to take your attention back to issues surrounding housing and the squatters in Ward 43.
Okay. Look, as far as housing is concerned,
yes,
housing is a competency only of national and provincial government. What municipalities do, we don't have funds for housing. So we identify land normally that municipalities own, and we transfer that land either to provincial or national government, and they then provide us with grants to build houses on those land. But there's a very, very limited amount of money. And that's why you find that we have housing applications dating back to the 1990s. And if you look at one region, for example, Region 6, there's a need of 6,000 housing units per year, every year. And we don't come close to providing the housing that people need. There's a massive backlog. And it's all dependent on the funding of a national and provincial government. But what I've also mentioned earlier on, the problematic tender processes that we have, that's fraught with corruption, certainly does not help the process of delivering housing to people. So as far as squatter camps are concerned, within our limited budget, what we are doing is to formalize informal settlements. We're trying our best to do that as far as possible. But unfortunately, what you find most often where settlements, informal settlements are, that those land, those pieces of land are not fit for habitation by people. So often we have to move people to other areas which are not too far from where they are, where they reside at the current time. Then we try and formalize. We provide piped water. We provide sewerage, electricity to stands, and we then allow people to come and bring materials to build the top structures. So we're trying to roll that out as fast as possible. Unfortunately, this financial year so far, we've only managed to formalize 7 informal settlements. And the reason why we've only been able to do 7, because we've had problems with business forums, where business forums refuse to allow the service suppliers to operate to formalize informal areas, because they say the city must give them the tenders, although they've never tendered for those particular projects. So we've had massive problems with business forums, especially in the Esterus area. Even today, with grass cutting and cleaning up, we were stopped our service provider was stopped by a business forum from continuing operations today in Esterus, and they demanded that the project should be given to them. So that doesn't help us either.
Mr. Mayor, you know, dumping is like drugs. It's not just the Esterus problem, a Ward 43 or a Tshwane problem. But what can we do? What can the city do? Is there education drive? Maybe an effective fine system? Maybe having big burns available where people can put garbage that is not acceptable at our dumping site in Highlands Park, where you can dump a garden? Is it still open there, councillor?
It's still open. Can I just interfere there? You know what? When it comes to, you've mentioned illegal dumping, it's the city's responsibility is definitely to lift the bins, and illegal dumping is a problem that has grown, you know, exponentially.
True.
And yes, there should be a fine system. If we don't live with the rule of law, then we can't really, you know, build a community without people following the rule of law. And dumping is illegal. It's breaking the law. And I think what we need to do is really, as community members from this community, is we need to speak out against our neighbors that are doing it. Because we all know that it's not allowed, it's not correct. If you look at our cemetery, many of us, our history is in the cemetery. You understand? People, I know that there are people who've lost their children, and they go to the grave sites, and when they go there and they find, rubbish in our cemetery. Now that is not the fault of the city. That is us as a community that we need to really do introspection into that. You understand? Even at our clinic, there are people dumping at the local clinic, and then you ask yourself, where is all this rubbish, you know, coming from? Because there are weekly, you know, rubbish removals from the city.
Mm.
So I think we need to speak hard to ourselves as a community when it comes to illegal dumping. This is one of the cleanest communities around, and we need to take responsibility for that. That's one thing that I always am adamant on, that it is our fault as a community that there's illegal, that we are dumping, and we are dumping in our own backyards, and we need to take responsibility for that specifically. Yes, the city has their responsibility. They have the, you know, the service provide. If the bins are not lifted, that is the fault of the city, because it's the responsibility of this of the waste department to ensure that on a weekly basis that bins are being lifted. But if bins are lifted and people are dumping, then that's not that's not the fault of the city. Then there's another problem there.
Yeah.
So when it comes to that, I think we should really look. That's an introspective issue.
Mr. Mayor, I see the time is busy catching up with us. Would you mind if we just slip in a few questions, please?
Yeah, sure. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. This one is from a listener. It's Mr. Chet Wenzel. He asked two questions. He asked, how and what do we benefit from the IDP of the city of Tshwane? And then the second question, let me just give you both, sorry. Will you make time to personally come and address the community?
Yes. As far as the IDP is concerned, and also the ward councillor is part of that process for when we do the consultations, what we do is when we draft our budget, we have the IDP process, which is legislated by law, which is basically a consultative process where we allow all regions and all wards to make comments on the budget and what kind of projects they would like to see happening in the areas, in the region, in the wards. Now, obviously, that's a wish list. You've got this very, very long wish list, but you've got the small cake. And now you've got to divide the small cake. Now, we've got 107 wards in the city of Tshwane. Like I said, if you take the 107 wards, the area, the size is 6,300 square kilometers. So in terms of geographical size, it is the third largest city in the world. So we've got a massive amount of infrastructure that needs to be looked after. We've got a lot of buildings, like you say, that need to be maintained, like your civic center. We have it in all 107 regions. So we need to see how we can prioritize, how we can spend the money. So what we rather doing, if we look at each ward, 107 wards, can become very difficult. So what we're doing, we're rather concentrating on the seven regions. Because as long as the infrastructure or the amenity that we're introducing in the area is close enough to a number of wards. So we're doing it from a regional perspective. Mm. And that's why in the region we say the following projects are going to take place. And obviously the projects won't just be in one ward, but with different wards. And it will be different departments doing different projects. So that's how we go about the IDP. It's a long wish list. Unfortunately, you can't implement the whole wish list. You simply won't have the budget for that. So we go as far as possible. We don't try and come up with a profit. We're not a business. We try and spend the whole budget, but at the same time, we try and have a bit of a surplus, because what we do, we need to put the money away for a rainy day. Because what does that mean, rainy day? When we have big infrastructure projects, we won't have the money to do it immediately. So what we need to do, we need to enter into long-term debt and get long-term debt so we can fix the thing now so people can use it. That thing can generate income for the city so that we can pay for more services. But at the end of the day, in 5 years' time, you need to pay off that long-term debt. And if you pay off that long-term debt, you're not going to do it with taking a slice out of that particular year's budget. So you need to put money away for a rainy day, putting money away to pay off long-term debt. So that's how we do it. We don't work on a profit basis. We spend all the money that we get in for a particular year. And the problem just is we never get in enough money. So obviously, a lot of people at the end of the day will be disappointed. But that's the way, unfortunately, the way it works. Now, as far as coming to address the communities, look what I've been doing because of the lockdown for the last 4 months. I have been arranging meeting via Zoom, via Teams and so forth. Now, I am aware not everybody has the financial ability to participate in such a town hall meeting. Yeah. So as soon as the lockdowns permit, once we're fully back on track, I don't know when the third... We are definitely going to get a third wave. There's now a consensus, which including the Minister of Health has agreed. We are going to get a third wave, which means increase lockdown levels again anytime from April to June. So that is expected. So we have very, very little time left. Yes. To engage with communities, and we have to try and do as much as possible in a very short period of time. What the Zoom meetings allow me to do, I can have meetings with 5-6 wards at the same time. So I can have meetings with a lot of people at the same time. Whereas you visit one ward, you only have one community hall or one civic center where you address maybe 150 to 200-300 people at one time. So we're trying to rationalize the time that I have available to reach as many people as possible. But I'm hope that we're going to be open long enough at a low level long enough that eventually I can go back to having one-on-one meetings with communities in community centers and civic centers.
All right. We look forward to those engagements, hopefully once the pandemic has passed. But we have a question from Norman Kleinans. He's asking, I'll just mention the two questions. Why are we paying a higher rate? This is concerning electricity. Why are we paying a higher rate than Mamelodi residents, as most of them only pay a flat rate? And then the second question is, what is the status of the electricity meter rollout that was published in the Moot Record?
Okay, let me answer both questions. That is not correct. We don't bill you on the basis of your township that you live in. We bill you on the basis of you being an account holder. Our system only recognizes account numbers, not addresses. That's the way it's set up. So what we do is, you do find that in some instances, like water, there's a flat rate where you use something like 9 kiloliters. They charge you for a flat rate. If you're above 9 kiloliters, then you charge additional rate. I don't think that is there as far as electricity. But you know something, that is tied to the fact that we charge one rate, which is work on, there's a specific formula for that rate, where we can't differentiate between the time of day what rate we charge. We should be able to charge a differential rate, which is an off-peak rate and an on-peak rate. But we can't charge it because we still use what people have in their homes. Many people, postpaid meters. You first consume the electricity and then you pay for it. So we can't charge a differential rate. But the moment we install prepaid meters, but everybody will have to have prepaid meters, then we can charge a differential rate. We will then charge different rates for when you use off-peak and when you use on-peak. So if you, the majority of time, you cook and do everything else when it's off-peak, then you will pay less for your electricity. But we can't introduce that yet until everybody use prepaid meters. So we have started the rollout of prepaid meters. What people are not aware of, so far we have already rolled out 300,000 prepaid meters. And we still have 190,000 to go. Then everybody will be on prepaid meters. And then we can introduce differential rates.
Mr. Mayor, there is also a lot of questions about the wrong estimations of electricity and water meters. And I must just tell you that I was also, between inverted commas, a victim of this. My water was estimated like in 1,005, while my normal usage is about 200, 300 a month. So that estimations can cause havoc on your account.
Yes, another very good reason why prepaid meters should be installed. You see, estimations is not a good thing. Many, many mistakes are made when it comes to estimations. You have, we employ hundreds of meter readers. Unfortunately, many of them, they're not honest. They don't go out and do proper readings. They sit at home or wherever they are, and they do estimations, and they put it down as actual readings, which is not correct. I'm not saying all of them, but there's quite a good percentage of them that do things like that. So the readings coming from them are not very, very reliable. Now, the moment you introduce prepaid meters, and currently we're only introducing electricity prepaid meters, and the moment you introduce prepaid meters, you do away with estimations. There's no longer any need for estimations because you pay for your electricity upfront before use. So there's no scope for estimations. Now, so far, we are introducing prepaid meters for electricity. Currently, we are in a trial phase for prepaid water meters. We're running a pilot project. Once that pilot project is proven to be successful, then we will also roll out prepaid meters for water. And that will be the end of any chaotic billing accounts. There won't be any more problems with estimations. So that is the future of Tshwane.
Great, great, Mr. Mayor. A question from Pamela is that over the past 3 years, positions in the municipality have been re-advertised and frozen constantly. How and when will the municipality be prioritizing these positions? And what advice would you give public management administration graduates looking to work in the municipality?
Look, let me put it this way. What we are doing, because of the limited budget, as I said, When we entered into office, we found out that we've got a 2 billion rand shortfall on our budget for this year. So we had to cut expenses. One of the major expenses we had to cut is the salary bill. So we could only look at prioritizing the positions for technical staff. When you're in administration, you know, administration is a position, you advertise an administration post, you get thousands, tens of thousands of applications. But when you advertise technical skills are rare. We in need of plumbers. We in need of electricians. So those are the type of posts that we have prioritized. Technical skills, because that is what you need for basic service delivery. So going forward, we are prioritizing the posts that require technical skills. And unfortunately, we were sitting with a 20 staff employment that's bloated. We have about 24,000 employees. For the services that the city delivers, we don't need 24,000 employees. So we need to right-size the employees, the body of employees that we have, but that is a discussion for another day.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think our last question, you've been very generous with your time, and we appreciate that, Mr. Mayor. Next time, hopefully, we will make it a two-hour interview to get through all the questions. This is a question from Sumay with an M. And this is also something that I experienced in my area, Mr. Mayor. She said, when are the pipes burst and water disruptions going to stop? We are tired of hearing there's no money for the upgrading of the old infrastructure. Now, I know I have this conversation many times with the councillor here. What happened is, Mr. Mayor, there will be a pipe burst and they will fix it. Tomorrow, 2 meters from there will be another pipe burst. They will fix it. And then 2 meters, and you might think that I'm exaggerating, but I'm sitting looking the councillor in his eyes and he can attest to that. So it doesn't make sense for us as residents to say, you are wasting money by patching. Why don't you take time, inform the residents, you will be without water for a day or two. We won't mind. But this constant and frequent interruptions is really not nice.
Well, I started off earlier by answering that question. Eastridge, the CBD, a lot of the Pretoria East area consists of asbestos pipes. These pipes were laid more than 60 years ago.
That's right, yeah.
Now, yeah, so at that time, PVC pipes did not exist. So what happens now? The city has been following a policy of densification. Because the more people you have around using your infrastructure, the less infrastructure you have to place in the ground. Now, the problem is this. I can give you an example of an area like Linwood, where you had one house on every 2,000 square meters. Suddenly now, they build these complexes.
Mm.
You now have, where you used to have one house, you now have 20 apartments. So that means if you apply the same water pressure for that you used to apply to provide one house with water, and you use the same water pressure for 20 apartments, the water won't reach the apartments. So it means now you have to increase the water pressure. The problem is that asbestos pipes are 60 years old. The same thing is happening in Eastridge. How did Eastridge not develop? It used to be matchbox houses. People have increased the size of their houses. They built more houses in Eastridge. More people moved into Eastridge. We had to increase the pressure on the pipes. Of course, the pipes are going to rupture. And the problem with asbestos pipes, it does not, when it ruptures, it does not rupture vertically. It ruptures horizontally. So you fix it here today, it runs along. And it continues rupturing on a horizontal basis. So until we have massive capital injection to replace all the pipe, and you can't just replace one pipe, the problem is it's going to cost us 12 billion rand.
Do you know what is our capital budget at the moment? Just to replace all the pipes will cost 12 billion rand. Our whole capital budget to do all infrastructure is 2.9 billion rand. That is where we are. We've got a massive, massive financial problem in the city of Tshwane. So it's going to call for long-term planning. We have to find ways to get around it. And maybe we will have to look at doing one specific geographical area and then moving to the next geographical area. But that means the other geographical areas will have to wait for years before it becomes their turn, unfortunately. We're in a terrible financial situation, unfortunately.
Mr. Mayor, once again, thank you very much for your time. And I must say, other than other politicians, you're only a mayor now for about 4 months or so. But you never mentioned once that I was not there. Don't ask me. So I must say, I appreciate that from you. And I think the way you speak, we will have this conversation again in a couple of months, maybe towards the end of the year, and just follow up. This conversation is recorded. We will see what was said and how can we go forward moving the city in our ward forward. But all the best for you and your party and the councillor here. I think the councillor will stay on and answer a few other questions. But thank you very much for your time, Mr. Mayor. We much appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me on your program. And thank you to your listeners for taking time out to listen to me. And have a good evening.
Thank you. Good night. It's 23 past 7 here on Port FM. We have unfortunately had to let the mayor go. But in studio with us is our councillor, Benjamin Lawrence II, who's going to try and answer some of the outstanding questions. We also told him he'll be here until 7, so he's also generous with his time. Let's run quickly. Kevin Kivitz will veer. The load shedding schedule comes out very late, and sometimes we don't even know when is load shedding. Benji?
I think... As the mayor mentioned earlier, there are certain things that is, you know, the city's that fall under the city's control. There are certain things that do not. Now, with regards to load shedding schedules, are determined by Eskom. So they're determined by Eskom. So they decide which hour and of the day, which areas are supposed to go off. And what happens is that, and sometimes it will be an emergency. You know, they just the same as he's mentioned that, you know, it can happen now, in the next hour, then there's load shedding. So we try ourselves, to be on the ball when this happens. You know, some of the times we get it right where we can actually in time, you know, forward the schedules to residents. But there's been apps that's been making it, but that were made available, that has made it easier, you know. And now I see a lot of people, sometimes I don't even have to, before I even try and send a schedule, that I see that a lot of people have already doing it. So the only thing is for us to be on the lookout for it, and I think to, you know, have access to these apps. It's become much, much easier now because everybody has that, yeah.
Thank you. Ruth got a lot of questions, which a lot have been addressed, but there's one thing that I want you to let us talk about it. She talked about estimations, network charges, and miscellaneous charges. Understanding your bill, how does it work? Do you, councillor?
Yes, sir.
Can you explain to us?
Look, the mayor did mention the estimations and the solution that we as local government are trying to implement estimation specifically.
Mm.
Look, what I always say to people is, you know, especially when it comes to the meter. If you are in right now, because we're sitting with this problem of meter reading not being consistent and not being regular, I always advise people it's better for you to be in control of the information, so that if you take your meter readings and to read your own electricity and water, to capture your meter readings and to take it into customer care, because that way you are in control of how the billing, you know, will happen.
Mm.
The other question you asked was about
network charges and miscellaneous charges. That's what I want to talk about, your bill.
Well, there is a water network charge as per approved tariff structure for maintenance. So this is something that was approved long ago. It is, you know, it is within their rights to do so. And then miscellaneous charges are all the charges excluding the normal monthly billing for rates and services. So sometimes, as you said, one needs to study, you know, the account. I know that in cases, I've had cases where people have charges that should not be there.
Mm.
You know, as the mayor has mentioned before, there are instances where you look at someone's account and it looks ridiculous. And there is a way, you know, to resolve this. The only thing is when you don't know, that you have to go to the right, you know, place. Customer care is there for when people, you know, don't have information, when they're struggling, you know, when they don't know what's going on, basically.
Okay, why were services like POP taken out of our community?
Okay, it's not.
That's also by Ruth.
All right, no, it's not been taken out of our community. I do know that lockdown has really made it very difficult, you know, for people to gain access to the offices and the officers that deal with POP. But POP has not been taken out. It's a standard legislated system of the city. And let me just explain who qualifies for POP. So the POP policy says that if the total household income is equal to or less than that of two pensioners' salaries, then you qualify. So
that will
so
be about 4 grand.
Roundabout, yes. Okay. So you qualify if that is your total household income. That means everybody that lives on the property, firstly. So what people also don't know is that every 2 years, POP does expire, so that you can go and reapply. Because the thing is, you could qualify for POP today and then tomorrow not qualify, but then you can qualify next week because of your financial situation. That's what it's about, is to see that people still do qualify for the program.
Okay, Novina Volviet, we're still in a pandemic. Why was the decision taken to disconnect the residents' power?
You know what? The city manager has stopped all cutoffs until further notice.
Okay.
So all cutoffs have been stopped until further notice. The credit control measures resumed as of the 1st of March. So as from the 1st of March, people have been receiving, you know, notices and letters to say you haven't paid your account, you're in arrears, you know. But all cutoffs have been stopped until further notice. So there are no cutoffs happening as we speak at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Until further notice. So there will be notification. There will be, you know, people will be notified when it has to resume. But I still want to stress that we all have to pay our accounts. I understand that we are in situations, but there are situations where people just do not pay the accounts.
Mm. Clara Deji asks, we are not notified by Tswane when offices are closed due to COVID cases.
I think that was the question was directed for the mayor. But it is something that we will take forward as well, because there has been complaints regarding, you know, notification, especially with regard to our customer care, because people, especially our elderly people, need to know ahead of time, because they make plans on specific days of the month to come and pay the electricity.
When will the big gaping pothole in Steenberg on the corner of villages be fixed? That was by Anonymous.
Gaping, I suppose. Eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to mention, Mr. Apple, I think the radio station have also agreed. Currently, we are having a service delivery campaign this week, where the city has done a focus on all service delivery issues, focusing on yesterday. So the grass cutting, the potholes, the street lights. I drove around Istres last night to check on all street lights. So we've already given half of Istres all the streets south of the river, all areas from east to west south of the river, all outstanding street lights have been forwarded to the region, and the rest obviously will be done probably by tomorrow evening. So, but I do encourage residents to forward, especially with regards to potholes, the ones that have not been reported. So this is our week. We're having this whole week. So if we can, I'm asking Port FM to assist as well, so that people can actually send their pothole issues, especially you know, to the station.
No.
Yes.
No, it's going to clock our. What's your number? Give them your number. You're not afraid of your number. 072?
0104867. Yeah, limit communicate some of them. But yeah, so this week we need to, if we can just get all information regarding potholes. You know, the city has already started. I've seen some potholes have been attended to because now we have hot asphalt.
Councillor, the pedestrian bridge here between us and Bavianspoort is apparently very low. I don't walk there.
Yes.
And dangerous. Is there any plans to improve it?
Look, the request has been made. The department was made aware of it a week ago when, you know, the COO made himself available. It was one of the issues that were mentioned. We do obviously have to, you know, engage, wait for feedback and also gain advice from them as to, you know, when, what, where.
The stench, at the wetlands. What's
in the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we are living in a city where people do not respect the environment. But we have to keep our eyes open because there are people dumping waste in our rivers, and that's chemicals in our rivers, and that is causing a lot of discomfort. The thing is, every time this starts and we report it, and the green scorpions are on it, and then it stops for a while. So I don't, we don't know. We need to really find a way to do you know, a permanent solution. Because there are people that really have absolutely no respect. And I wish, if people know, if there is information about the people that are doing this, people should come forward so that these people can be dealt with.
Our soccer stadium, this is a question by Colvin Cook. He said the stadium is vandalized because it's owned by the municipality. Who can we speak to lease the stadium from? Security is also a problem in the soccer stadium. Is there any soccer activities currently there?
Well, I can tell you that we did work on a new policy regarding leases. So there are plans, especially, you know, people can approach this, where people, you know, can approach the city with regards to leasing. So they will, I think, Colvin, if you can contact me, we can have a further discussion around it. I think, where the community, if the community are involved or, take ownership of our facilities because it is dear to them, I do think there will be much better, I don't want to say management, but, if we take care of our facilities, obviously within the right framework that government has laid out, I do believe that it'll be much better.
Councillor Baya Danke, Mensa, very, very much for listening. Baya Mensa, ons kon nie by julle vra kom nie. Toe ek hier in die studio kom, toe die station manager al reeds omtrent 100 vra en ons moes daar deur sif. Nou Leen, al die ander wie se Fransie kon geantwoord het nie. Ons sal kyk wat se vra regtig nie beantwoord is nie en dan sal ons vir die councillor se kantoor stuur, the mayor. And we will give you feedback. This show will be available on podcast and you can listen to it. And hopefully you can learn a lot from the things in the city. Thank you very much, Benji. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are out of here. We have a short evening. I'm going to play out with Grace Jones with La Vie en Rose. Enjoy. Did you see that?